Last week, Republican Matt Bevin became Kentucky's governor-elect, which will likely bring many issues to the forefront in the coming months. One issue that comes to mind is the future of labor unions and right-to-work legislation. That's our topic on this week's Eastern Standard. Send your questions, comments, or stories now to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com or call 859-622-1657 or call in when you tune in for Eastern Standard Thursday morning at 11 on WEKU. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. With the passing of the 2015 gubernatorial election comes speculation about what will change in Kentucky, along with the change in administration in Frankfort. During his campaign, Governor-elect Matt Bevin was quite open in his support for so-called right-to-work legislation in the Commonwealth. And so our question today, will Kentucky become the 26th state to pass such legislation statewide? What does all this mean for Kentuckians? We're interested in your questions, your comments, your personal stories, stories about right-to-work legislation, about labor unions, and your own experiences with employment in Kentucky and elsewhere. And with us to discuss this topic are two guests who I believe are going to hold the banner quite well for their side of the issue. Jim Waters, president of the Bluegrass Institute, a think tank in Kentucky and a longtime promoter, actually, of right-to-work legislation in Kentucky. Jim, thank you for being with us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me today.
Jim, based in Bowling Green, but in the area for some other business as well.
And, well, we're in Lexington. Actually, our office is in Lexington, but I'm all over the state, so in Richmond today.
We are glad that you are here today. Thank you so much. And Bill Londrigan, president of the Kentucky chapter of the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations, known to most as AFL-CIO, and I guess we would describe the AFL-CIO as the preeminent labor organization in the country?
Labor Federation, that we call it, where all the unions belong together, and that we see able to speak with one voice on our issues like right to work.
And Bill, based in Frankfort, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Let's begin the program with a story that one of our colleagues in Kentucky Public Radio produced recently. Actually, this past spring, Lisa Autry of WKU Public Radio at Bowling Green produced a story on the fact that 25 states in the U.S. To date, when she produced this story in March, had passed so-called right-to-work laws. And the only so-called southern state without such a law is Kentucky. And, of course, that is possibly going to change under the administration of the new governor, Matt Bevin. I do want to point out before we air this story that we've discovered that following the airing of the story on NPR's Morning Edition, there were some issues that were raised about the story, so some clarifications. So we're going to make sure we point those out at the end of the story. But this story produced by our colleague Lisa Autry at WKU Public Radio.
This past January, the Republican-led Kentucky Senate did what it does just about every year. It passed a statewide right-to-work bill.
There being 24 yeas and 12 nays, Senate Bill 1 is passed.
Keeping with tradition, when the bill arrived at the Democratic-controlled House, it died. For decades, Democrats have rejected efforts to allow employees in unionized companies the freedom to choose whether to join a union. Now the battle has shifted from the state house to individual counties.
Warren Fiscal Court is now called to order.
In December, Warren County became the first county in the nation to pass a local right-to-work ordinance, according to the National Right-to-Work Legal Defense Foundation. Judge Executive Mike Buchanan said at the meeting the absence of a right-to-work law has cost jobs.
I know of one that we lost to Cartersville, Georgia, that was a big prospect, and they were coming here and they were getting ready to go to their board of directors to get it approved. And then someone brought up the we weren't right-to-work. We all of a sudden got an email that said, you know, we're rethinking this now.
The Warren County ordinance passed with one dissenting vote. The reason was summed up in two letters, GM. Warren County is home to a General Motors manufacturing plant, the only one that produces the Corvette. It's a union shop. Employees must pay dues in order to work there.
General Motors employs about 800 people, and the economic impact is seen throughout the community. If you can't support the organization that's supporting you, it's going to fall apart.
That's Eldon Renault, president of the local United Auto Workers Union. He's a huge right-to-work critic and argues these kinds of laws are a race to the bottom.
Look at the states that are right-to-work. Look at Mississippi. Look at Alabama. I mean, some of the worst education, highest poverty. What happens is that as they reduce the union labor, less and less people are making a decent wage.
Actually, since World War II, income and job growth have increased faster in right-to-work states. Economists also point out that Mississippi and Alabama are not heavily taxed, so there's less money to spend on education and social services. 11 Kentucky counties have passed local right-to-work laws since last year, several along the Tennessee border, which is a right-to-work state. Jim Waters heads the Bluegrass Institute, a Kentucky-based think tank that advocates for smaller government. He says the state is losing business.
We're not saying that a right-to-work law is going to fix all of our economic problems in Kentucky, but what we're saying is that it's an important tool in the state's economic toolbox.
Meanwhile, several labor unions, including some from out of state, have filed a federal lawsuit to stop Kentucky's local right-to-work movement. For NPR News, I'm Lisa Autry in Bowling Green.
And that story by Lisa Autry of WKU Public Radio aired during a morning edition last March nationally. And NPR did issue a couple of clarifications, as a few editor's notes following the broadcast of that story, saying that one of the clarifications, the story reported that for decades, Democrats had rejected efforts to allow employees in unionized companies the freedom to choose whether to join a union. NPR points out more accurately, Democrats have rejected legislative efforts to allow Kentucky to become a right-to-work state. An employee cannot be forced to join a union. Similarly, NPR points out it was inaccurate to say union membership is a requirement to work at the General Motors plant in Bowling Green. The president of the local UAW had told Lisa Autry the plant was a closed shop and later clarified his remarks to say union membership was a requirement after employment. And that statement was incorrect as well. Employees in unionized companies don't have to join a union but may be compelled to pay what's called an agency fee to cover the cost of bargaining the contract where the employee works. And I guess that gentleman with me in the studio, Jim Waters and Bill Londrigan, I guess that may be at the core of our conversation today on right to work, the issue of right to work laws that potentially would allow companies to hire employees who would no longer be required to pay any kind of fee because that is a union job.
And still get the benefits of the union, as well as the collective bargaining agreement, the grievance procedure, and no longer being at-will employees.
Let's define our terms here, and let me once again reintroduce, that's Bill Londrigan, president of the Kentucky chapter of the AFL-CIO, and Jim Waters is here, president of the Bluegrass Institute, an organization, a think tank promoting right-to-work legislation in Kentucky. What is right-to-work? Let's just define the term, first of all.
Well, right-to-work simply means that workers cannot be fired for not paying dues. Actually, there is a good point in that editors know the story. It's not that you have to join a union, have to actually become a member of a union, but you have to, if you're hired at the Corvette plant in General Motors, you have to pay the dues, the fees. So right to work simply makes that a choice rather than a requirement for employment. And I would challenge my friend Bill Londrigan here, or any union, and Eldon Renault, to say that if a person didn't want to pay dues and refused to pay dues, that they would still be employed in Kentucky at the GM Corvette plant without a right to work law.
Well, let me clarify a couple things. One is that the agreements that we talk about are called union security agreements that go in a collective bargaining agreement. And these things provide for the checkoff of union dues or union fees to go to the union so that we have a financially viable organization so that we can do the things that help workers raise wages and get better benefits, like collective bargaining. There's a massive amount of resources and costs that are involved with negotiating contracts the size that we represent at General Motors or Ford or General Motors. There's a grievance procedure that is in place in these collective bargaining agreements, which give workers protections for their jobs, which have several steps in a process that a lot of times ends up in arbitration, which is also very costly. So while Mr. Waters thinks that these workers should just be able to opt out and not pay anything, he certainly does not have any answers for me when it comes to us having to, under federal labor law, to represent and to bargain collectively for all of the members in the bargaining unit.
Let me back up to another issue, though, related to federal labor law and the whole concept of labor unions. Let's, again, try to make sure we lay out the groundwork for our listeners here. labor unions have been important in the history of the United States and industrialization and so forth in this country. At one time, I assume that we had much higher percentage of participation in labor unions by workers in the United States. Maybe, Bill, you can give us some information and statistics on where that stands. How many of the millions of people working in the U.S., what percentage are actually members of labor unions today, and how has that changed?
Well, that's a good question, because there's got to be a point of clarification, because what we usually do is we measure the workforce participation rate and the amount of union density in the workforce. So it's as a measure of the total workforce. So as the workforce continues to grow each year, unions have taken a smaller percentage of that workforce. Now, the AFL-CIO and the unions that we represent have over 13 million members, and that actual whole number has held pretty steady over the last few years. In fact, here in Kentucky, we've actually ticked up a tenth of a percent of a point or so on union membership here in Kentucky. But the important thing is that folks need to realize is that when they throw the numbers out about the decline in the union movement, it's more related to the less union density as a percent of the workforce, which is continually growing. In order for us to continue to have a high percentage of the workforce, we must be able to organize millions of people in addition. And of course, with Mr. Waters and the companies and the organizations that back his group, they do everything they can to stop us from doing that.
Okay, let's get Jim
right to the right to work law does not prevent collective bargaining. It does not prevent workers from associating together. It does not prevent workers from joining a union. It does not prohibit companies and labor from working together on a collective bargaining agreement. It does not prevent unions from the training programs, any of the programs that they want to do. It does not prevent any of that. It simply allows individual union members to choose whether or not to pay dues. Now, Bill says that the dues monies are needed in order to provide proper representation for members and to do what unions do and protect workers. But if you look at 2 years ago, labor unions are required to file what's called an LM-2 form with the federal government on how they spend their dues monies. And the fact is that the Local 2164 in Bowling Green, we heard Eldon Renault on the piece there, the president of that union, that they only spent about 2% of that money on local representation of workers. The rest of that money, I didn't interrupt you.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you because that is
okay,
true.
Am I going to be allowed to finish?
I'll tell you what, and Bill, we will get to Bill after the break.
Okay.
Yes.
That means a majority of that money, those dues monies, were spent outside of the community. So I think that a right-to-work law, what we've seen is that right-to-work laws actually make labor unions more responsive to their membership because the dues money's actually used, more of it's used for actual representation.
Okay, we are due to take a station break, and we're going to come back to Bill Londrigan. We're going to talk about the issue of the use of dues monies that are paid to support labor unions. Right-to-work laws and labor unions are topic on this week's Eastern Standard following last week's election of a governor who is, by all appearances, supportive of enacting right-to-work legislation in Kentucky. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST or join the program by calling 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. This week's topic, right-to-work legislation as a possible statewide legislation in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And as we understand it, 12 counties of the 120 counties, one-tenth of the counties in Kentucky, have a countywide right-to-work legislation.
They passed the second readings. Four other counties have passed a first reading of it. So and those 12 counties have fully.
Those counties that have passed right-to-work legislation, to a great extent, are border counties.
That's correct.
Near Tennessee.
Well,
a lot of
one in Ohio, too. Boone County that borders Ohio.
Okay.
That's the fourth largest county in Kentucky.
We're discussing this concept of right-to-work legislation. We're interested in your comments, your questions, your personal stories about labor unions and employment. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, 800-621-8890. Now, Bill Londrigan, president of the Kentucky chapter of the AFL-CIO, want to make sure we pick up where Jim Waters left off in that issue. Jim is claiming that of dues paid into the – this is the General Motors plant.
2 years ago.
Bowling Green, 2% went to local.
Right. 2% was spent on representing workers at the local level.
Okay, Jim, Bill.
Well, I have no way of he has no way of substantiating that right now. He said he looked at an LM report.
We filed the open records.
You don't even need open records to get that. Let me just say this, okay? In general, unions spend a great deal and an overwhelming majority of their money representing workers. That's what we do. 2%, where he got that from, I have no idea. But let me just say this to you. We represent workers in collective bargaining, as I mentioned earlier. It's a very involved and very resource-oriented process where we sit down and negotiate large-term contracts for thousands of workers and sometimes just a handful of workers. And no matter where we are, it takes a lot of money and a lot of resources. The whole idea here is for our opponents, like Mr. Waters and the groups that he gets financing from, really just want to starve off unions and give us less resources to operate from. They want us to do something that nobody else is required to do under any law, and that is to provide a service without the ability of collecting a fee. Now, look, if you go to a barber and get your hair cut, you get it done, you say, well, I'm not paying. Well, the barber may have recourse and say, may call the local police and say, hey, well, you know, you need to pay for that haircut. The cop gets there and he says, well, I got no way to enforce. There's no law saying that you have to pay the fee for the service that's provided. And Mr. Waters wants to claim that it's all about employee freedom. Well, we got employee freedom. It's called democracy. It works every day in a union workshop. When we organize a union, it's done on the basis of a majority vote, which is monitored by the National Labor Relations Board. When we elect union officers, it's done by a majority vote. And, Jim, if the folks don't like their union, they also have the opportunity to get rid of it through a decertification election under federal law, which only requires the showing of 30% of the workers in the work site. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Oh, so if workers really hate a union that much...
You go ahead.
Let me ask you, Jim Waters.
Or am I going to be part of this conversation?
Oh, you are. Jim of the Bluegrass Institute, what I want to know is, we talk about the percentage of fees that are being spent to support, say, the local efforts of a labor union. Would your view of labor unions change if, say, 85% of the monies collected were going to the local community? Or is the issue a philosophical issue with labor unions and,
I have no problem with labor unions. What I have problem with is a mandate, is people being forced to either join or pay dues. That's where my issue is. And, the fact is that, again, in Indiana, for example, last year or since they passed Right to Work, which was in 2012, their unions have added 50,000 new members. We've seen Tennessee, we saw 31,000 new union members added 2 years ago. This is not about union busting. The fact of the matter is that when a state is Right to Work, it attracts more manufacturing opportunities. And we haven't had a new automotive manufacturing plant built in a non-right-to-work state since Toyota was built in Georgetown here in the mid-1980s. So I'm just saying the point being that this is not about union busting. This is about freedom. This is about individuals having the freedom to do it. Now, he's right about we didn't have to file an open records request on the LM2. That's correct. We just looked it up, and you can look it up, how those dues monies are being spent at the local level. The problem is that much of that money is being spent in ways that individual union members do not approve of. So if you have Right to Work, I think unions become more responsive to local members, how they want their money spent, how they want a contract. And as far as majority rule goes, he mentioned that too. I think we should take a vote here today about Bill taking us out for lunch. You know, if we have a majority vote, you know, he should take us out for lunch. I mean, this is about individuals choosing.
You have some problem with democracy and majority rule, because that's what this country is run on. That's what we ran elections on, Mr. Waters. Right. And that's what we do with the work site. Okay. Now, look, you had your chance to make
that's
all
fine.
These wild
claims. You asked me a question, so
you
I had
all
me to
well,
answer.
Well, obviously you don't, because you want to make sure that that individual that joins into a work site that gets the benefits does not pay the dues or the fees that are required. And let me just throw something else at you. We talked about the union density and the amount of workers in the workforce that are unionized. Well, here in Kentucky, we got about 13%. Now, I'm not real good at math, but that leaves about 87% of the workforce that is not in unions that have workplaces that could be available to them. If they so decided that they thought a union was so burdensome, so onerous on their individual freedom, they got 87% of the work sites that they could potentially get a job in and take care of that problem right away. But what we'll find out here is that this is not a creation of the workers in the workforce looking for a way to pay no dues and get benefits. It's a way for big business to try and strangle unions so that we can make less wages and bargain less contracts.
I'd like to talk a little bit about process here, because I know the philosophies, we're going to keep going. We could go for a couple of hours talking the philosophy of right to work versus
talking about philosophies. He did make a comment about wages, about incomes. And what we're finding is that since the recession, wages have increased faster in right-to-work states. Oklahoma, wages are up 5.5% over the national growth rate in wages. Indiana, wages are up. We've seen this in Michigan. Michigan has added 142,000 new jobs. This is the home of the UAW, the home of the automakers, home of auto workers union. But they passed right to work. So they understand that this is about economic growth and individual liberty.
Quick response to that.
Well, naturally, he throws all these statistics out, all these figures out about these other states. You know, 1 year after right to work was passed in Michigan, the Gannett newspaper reported they couldn't find one job that came there as a result of right to work. And you go to Indiana, all these great jobs that Mr. Waters is talking about, where are they? You know, and here in Kentucky, in those great counties that passed these right to work ordinances, where are all those jobs, all the if that don't never produce one job?
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and we want to get our listeners involved in this conversation. Send us an email. We have at least one email that I want to get to. We have at least one caller on the line. If you get on the line, please be patient with us, and we'll get you on the air at 800-621-8890. The email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. But let me ask you, gentlemen, we have Jim Waters of the Bluegrass Institute and Bill Londrigan, president of the Kentucky chapter of the AFL-CIO. How will things change this coming legislative session as far as an approach to the possibility of right-to-work legislation statewide? This past year, there was a movement on the part of the Kentucky Senate that passed legislation, didn't make it because of the House being Democrat-controlled, and we have a Democratic governor. We now have a Republican governor coming into office. Is the likelihood of passage of right-to-work legislation higher this coming legislative session, or is there still some steps before that could happen?
Well, I think it's higher because of what these counties have done. Many of the counties that passed right-to-work ordinances are actually represented in Frankfort by Democrats. For example, Simpson County, which is now along the Tennessee border. Warren County was the first county to pass this, and then Simpson County, which is just south of Warren County and is along the Tennessee border, they became the second county to pass this, and they're actually represented in Frankfort by a Democratic representative who in the past has gone along with the leadership of the House, which has been opposed to right to work. And, of course, they had a Democratic governor. So I think there's a lot of dynamics with a new governor, with a new Republican governor. Those dynamics will change, and I think we'll see more momentum on this at the state level. But the fact that we've had 118 votes on local right-to-work ordinances and 113 yeses, with many Democrats voting for this, I think shows this is not a partisan issue, but that's kind of a referendum on the support for this idea.
Well, that's a great referendum, 10% of the counties, Jim.
You all 113 promised, of 118 votes.
I'm sorry, but you had, you know, all these great grand illusions when you all started this year last year that by the end of January you're going to have 30 and then 50, and that never really materialized. But let me say that's right. It is not a partisan issue because some of the counties that were Republican counties, like Oldham County, Grayson County, defeated right to work.
Oldham County passed the first reading of it.
So. Well, what difference does that make? They voted it down on a vote of 7-2, Jim.
They voted down not to have a second reading right away. They didn't vote
whatever.
The ordinance down.
Yeah, yeah, just, you know, split hairs, but they didn't pass a right-to-work ordinance in Oldham County.
I'd like to talk about why when we get a chance, why that happened.
Well, so. We're probably not going to get a chance because I'm going to talk about all these other counties that didn't pass right-to-work ordinances and the ones that actually passed anti-right-to-work ordinances, much to my colleague's chagrin here. There are folks that do not support this. I had one Republican come to me afterwards and said, I know what this is all about. It's all about politics. It's all about politics. It's not about whether or not you can get more jobs or better wages or any of that nonsense. It's all about whether or not you can control the political system so you can turn back the clock on workers, pass right to work, repeal prevailing wage, don't increase the minimum wage. There's a whole package of items that go along with this so-called right-to-work legislation.
Let me get a caller into our conversation here. And actually, coincidentally, we do have a caller from Grayson on the line, from Grayson, Kentucky. This is Adam, and I want to ask Adam to be part of the conversation and speak up and interact with Bill Londrigan and Jim Waters. Go right ahead, Adam.
All right. My name is Adam Bush. I'm out of UA Local 452 in Lexington, Kentucky. And I was just wanting to bring up the fact that not only when these out-of-state interests come into our state trying to pass these right-to-work ordinances, most of them being lawyers and et cetera, and having no background in the workforce, they come into our state and tell us how we need to work and how we need to come together, and you know, they fight off our only voice in the workplace. I'm a third generation member of the union, and I'm a proud union member, and I just, the next thing they're going to want to do is pass a law repealing prevailing wage. As a union pipe fitter, that destroys us. Our plumbers that work in Lexington, do you think we can compete at the hospitals and the colleges when stuff of that nature is passed? That is just, I mean, you look at the foreclosure rates in Tennessee. You look at the poverty rates in Tennessee. Ain't that supposed to be who we're competing against on the southern border? What are we competing against, starving to death?
All right, Adam, thank you so much for your call. I apologize for thinking that you were from Grayson, Kentucky, since that is your name. But thank you so much for your call, Adam. Maybe Jim Waters would like to respond first to your comments.
Well, that's the thing about this. This does not – a right-to-work law does not prevent workers from working for a union. And collective bargaining their agreements with employers. What it does require is that it requires unions to convince workers that this is in their best interest to pay dues. So, you know, the Bluegrass Institute is a nonprofit organization. We have to show that we're doing an effective job in the work we do so people support our work. And so I believe, I have every confidence that a lot of these unions, especially like the ones that work at GM, at Ford, and at some of the manufacturers in Kentucky, I think they'll do fine. They'll be able to convince their workers that this is a good deal for them. Their membership, they'll be able to persuade people to join, but they just won't be able to force them to do that. Now, what is wrong with
that? There's this force. This whole thing is force. These are agreements that are bargained and contract with the employer. The union doesn't unilaterally come in and say, hey, this is the way it's going to be. As I mentioned earlier, we engage in collective bargaining, the tried and true tested method for raising wages, improving safety, and making sure we got good health care and retirement benefits for workers. You know, all this notion that we force the workers to do this and force them to do that is total nonsense.
Is that nonsense? So tell me.
They vote on a contract that says whether or not the majority supports it or not. What's forced about
somebody,
that? That's called majority rule,
somebody,
Mr. Waters. What's wrong with that?
If somebody doesn't want to pay dues, tell me that you won't require that they lose their employment.
Well, if they don't comply with the terms of the agreement, that's probably what will happen. So
it's force.
No, it's not force.
That's a form of force, a
term of employment. If UPS tells the people that work for UPS that they got to wear brown outfits, and wait a minute, and a guy or a gal comes in and says, I'm not going to wear the brown outfit for today, what do you think is going to happen to them? They're going to get fired because they're not complying with the terms of employment.
If it's so great, if this situation is so great without right to work or without that, why not allow? I mean, if it's not forced, if it's a great deal,
why don't you
can make the case, which you can, why not allow it to be done in a voluntary way rather than a mandate?
Let me just point out, we're talking about right to work legislation as a possible statewide matter in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, based on the election of Matt Bevin as governor last week. We're interested in listener comments about right to work legislation, about labor unions in general. Let's get the phone number 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Or you can send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Let me ask you, Jim Waters, a caller talked about the attorneys, lawyers from out of state coming in promoting issues such as right-to-work legislation.
Mm-hmm. I'm not an attorney, and I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not from out of state.
What are the connections of your organization? Is it a Bluegrass Institute?
We have collaborated with groups around the country, the Heritage Foundation, for example, which, by the way, just released a new report report showing comparing wages in right-to-work and non-right-to-work states. So, you know, we've worked with other organizations like we do on every issue. But here we have gone to these counties, and I don't know of one county. Bill talked about a county that had passed an anti-right-to-work ordinance. I don't know what that county is.
Marshall County, McGoffin County?
They did not pass. They might not have passed a right-to-work ordinance, but they didn't pass an anti. There is – I don't
– All right. They passed a resolution. Excuse me.
Okay. Well, anyhow – And the other issue on that is this is not about politics with us. I mean, we have talked to many people in like Simpson County, right on the Tennessee border, that have watched Caterpillar and Beretta gun manufacturers and other manufacturers that decided not to locate on the Kentucky side and go to Tennessee. And because one of the reasons, because we're not a right to work state.
Let me get Bill Londrigan in. We got a minute before a station break, Bill.
Well, all of the examples that he used, Beretta, we looked into that. They said they moved there because they got better incentives down there. All of these crazy examples that are thrown out constantly, you know, just don't seem to ring true when we go into the details of it. You know, and when we talked about Adam and the union members and the workers that are out there, they're out there working hard for a living, and they're all not jumping up and down to say, I'm going to get this wage and these good benefits and not have to be participating as paying with union dues like Mr. Waters claims.
I think he should be able to. I'm not saying Adam. I think Adam should have the freedom to do that. And we see it in other states. The sky is not falling in Tennessee, for example, where union membership has increased.
Yeah, it increased because jobs were brought back into the Saturn plant. Do you think there was a large influx of
union jobs were brought back? That's my point is we don't know how many.
It had nothing to do with right to work. It was already a right to work state.
Well, it certainly wouldn't have attracted those. I have a question on that, by the way. If that's the case, why haven't we seen an automotive manufacturing plant built in a non-right-to-work state since Toyota built their plant here in Georgetown? Every other automotive manufacturing plant has been built since then in a right-to-work state. Name me one that has not.
Well, what difference does it make, Jim? We also have the third highest rate of automobile production in the whole United States. We have the best plants in Louisville. We got General Motors. We got Ford. We got Toyota. We got more automobile manufacturing plants than almost any other southern
state.
We
haven't attracted any new work here in 30
years. We don't want to talk necessarily about politics as such. We talk about the issues, of course, associated with right to work and labor unions. But I do want to, in the final segment coming up, talk about what might be happening in coming months, in the coming years of the Bevin administration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Listeners, you're invited to be part of our conversation. We have a couple of emails and some phone calls waiting on the line. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsberg, and with our guest Jim Waters of the Bluegrass Institute and Bill Londrigan of the Kentucky AFL-CIO discussing the possibility of right-to-work legislation becoming a statewide matter in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, especially since the election of a governor who is clearly in support of right-to-work legislation. 800-621-8890. There may be a line open if you'd like to get on board or send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Let me go through a few of the emails that we've received here, gentlemen, and see if I can group them in a way that so we don't have to spend a lot of time on each of them individually. But let's see. Mary June writes, my son is a union member. He says right-to-work is more about regulations and the money involved to do a job as a contractor, meaning it is cheaper to work in a right-to-work state. Is it cheaper to work in a right-to-work state? I'm not quite sure I understand exactly.
Maybe she means wages are generally lower in right-to-work states. In spite of what Mr. Waters' friends in the Heritage Foundation say, longstanding and verifiable studies have shown that workers on average make at least $1,500 a year less in right-to-work states for comparable jobs.
Okay. If you look at all the variable factors, cost of living, you look at cost of buying things, cost of a home, when you take all of those factors into consideration, right-to-work states have produced higher private sector wages in the private sector in the last decade. So, and the new Heritage Foundation study, if you're interested in looking at what those variables are, the problem with some of the studies in the past has been they haven't completely taken into account all those factors.
You're about to give us a citation about where we could find that study?
That's at the Heritage Foundation, yes.
Just the Heritage
and
Foundation,
I haven't even had a chance to put it up on our site. I will, though, at bips.org. But for us, this is about people that need opportunities, you know, and it's not about politics with us. We've seen Democratic local Democratic magistrates in Boone County and Simpson County and Warren and other places who have approved this. So again, it's about the jobs, the economic growth, about individual freedom.
Can I say that we can also find the report that shows the opposite of what Mr. Waters is purporting on the Economic Policy Institute website?
And that was the study I was referring to that didn't take into full account all of the cost of living
factors. And we will make sure that we have links to sites.
Yeah.
Both of
Let
your
people
sites
compare
with
them.
The resources
great,
available.
Yeah.
So, yes, sorry, because our listeners do want to,
that's great.
I think, want to dig into that detail. Let's go to the telephone and talk to David from Oak Grove. And, David, we apologize. You've been waiting a long time, so I hope you're still on the line. Go right ahead.
Yes, thank you for giving me an opportunity, and I thank both the gentlemen for their very well-phrased comments. I'd like to say that Mr. Bevin will be inaugurated or has been in a Southern Baptist church. Because I want to bring up the morality and the educational. I've been a Southern Baptist or a Christian for about 50 years. I've never seen Labor Day celebrated like we do Veterans Day. There's no history of labor taught in the church or in the churches, and there's not much taught really in the public schools because I think it may be a forbidden subject like economics. But at one point, it was illegal to buy from China in America. Now we have most of the things that come from China stamped made in China. I don't understand, the word forced was used. I have a theory that the Chinese workers are forced to join a union. It's called the Communist Party, and you can see the benefits they have. They don't have free speech, and they don't have a right to collective bargaining. And I see an economy where I live, the big box stores, and you know what Kentucky has and Tennessee, the big box stores, most of those workers or many of those workers are subsidized by food stamps and WICA and other governmental programs, Section 8, because they can't afford it. The big box stores won't allow them to have collective bargaining on their own choices, and if they do, they're fired or run out, whether it's a chicken plant in Mayfield, Kentucky, or a Lowe's in Hopkinsville, or some other Walmart across there. They will do the same thing. Since the 60s, and I'm that old, I've watched manufacturing jobs go to China and Mexico. So I'm frustrated about it. And I don't understand why political, you talk about political, the Family Foundation, which is the political voice box for the Southern Baptists, never takes a position on the smoking ban or the right to work laws. They speak about other more like gay marriage, but they don't really educate the people about that. And you talked about Tennessee. Now, I'm not the Hemlock plant, which closed down in Clarksville. It didn't close because of unionization. It closed because of what I see is
don't know what happened there, David. You closed because of what?
Because of imports from China.
From China, okay.
The Hemlock, millions of dollars spent by the taxpayers or others to build a giant, and you can look it up, plant down there. David, it's in a right-to-work state.
David, you've made some very important points, and we're really glad to have your input, but we need to move on and get some response from our guests. And again, thank you so much for being part of this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. Right-to-work laws. Labor unions in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, 30 seconds each from Jim Waters and Bill Londrigan, please. Jim.
Well, I think the most moral thing you can do is allow people to do what's best for themselves and for their families. And I think in many situations, labor union membership is great. I talked to a black lady in Louisville who said, I love my union. You know, they've done a lot for me, but I don't think anybody should be forced to join it. And that's, I think, the most moral thing you can do is allow people the freedom to make their own personal decisions.
I would just like to add to that. The moral thing to do is pay people good wages, get them good benefits, and give them a good standard of living. We do that through collective bargaining. We do that through unity. We do that through a democratic process. That's how we do it, and that's how it's been done. And that's how we've created the middle class. And right now, the caller was right on track. While Mr. Waters and all his colleagues got us fighting the war between the states over who can lower wages more, we have an international and a global economy that are eating our lunch, that are taking jobs away by the millions. Here in Kentucky, we've lost 50,000-plus manufacturing jobs to China alone since the passage of the World Trade Organization and the permanent normal trade relations for China. We have an ongoing international and global war on workers going on, and the purpose of it is to ratchet down their wages and their benefits so that large corporations can make excess profits, and we've seen it all over the world. We don't have to talk about the concentration of capital and the accumulation of wealth by the 1%, while all the workers have
You'd rather not talk dying. About any of it, but I think it does need to be discussed. We've only had 4% in real manufacturing growth in Kentucky in the last decade, and you're absolutely right. We've lost thousands, tens of thousands of jobs, and membership in private sector unions has continued to decline.
And so, one thing you both agree on is certainly we want Kentucky to thrive economically, and we want Kentucky's workers to
I think
do
we
well,
all agree.
So that Mr.
It's
Waters and his there. Organization should come out against all of the so-called free trade agreements like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, NAFTA, GATT, CAFTA, but I've never seen you taking a position on any of those particular trade agreements that have decimated our economy and stole millions of our manufacturing jobs both here and across the United States. Where is your position on the Bluegrass Institute?
I'll answer it if you'll let me. Our position is that you need to catch up and understand we're in a global economy. And if you're going to compete, you have to understand that you have to have more competitive factors. And the more we have, the right-to-work states have more business-friendly atmosphere. They have more competition both for jobs and for the laborers. And I think it's healthy. That's all I'm saying. I believe it's healthy.
Let's go back to the telephone. Let's talk to, on the line, Sherman from, I believe this is, am I correct that this is, I'm trying to follow, Sherman from Harrodsburg. Are you on the line, Sherman?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go right ahead. Thanks.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm not in manufacturing, but I am a very proud member of Actors Equity Association, affiliated with the AFL-CIO as an actor. In our union, if a person decides not to join the union, then they simply don't receive the benefits of the union
agreement.
What am I trying to say? Benefits.
The agreement.
They don't get the same wages. They don't get the health insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They don't pay fees, but they don't receive any of the benefits. Is that not true in other sectors?
No, it's in many places you must pay dues in order to maintain employment. In Kentucky, if you work at a unionized operation, a plant, a manufacturing operation, you're required to join, or rather, you're required to pay union dues in order to maintain employment there. And
I think it's interesting, though, to consider if the union does not bargain for those people who choose not to join them, they'll find more people want to join.
That's been
my experience.
Well, and that'll happen without people being forced to do it. People will be attracted to union membership. Why?
Jeez.
All we're saying is that people should not be forced to join.
Well,
they should make the decision.
Here we go
join.
With this force stuff again, okay? Now, Jim Waters, I want you to go down to the work site here on the next corner and apply for a job. And if there's a union there, don't take it, okay? And then you won't be forced to do anything. In fact, we don't force anybody to do anything. We negotiate contracts with employers that have certain conditions and standards that employees have to meet. And Jim, just like the UPS driver that may have a brown suit on that doesn't come to work with that brown suit on that day and gets sent home or fired, that's the same kind of relationship that exists at all these work sites. What the caller is describing is a freelance organization, not so much a manufacturing or a regular employment situation, but actually they're
regular employment.
Well, you're actually,
I mean, I work all the time.
Well, you're actually describing a right to work situation in a sense, or a situation where the worker does not get the benefits because they're not paying the dues or the fees that you're receiving for being a member. Is correct?
No. Well, and in some places, I'll admit that workers do receive some of the benefits because unions have they have exclusive representation. So that means that some workers will get benefits who maybe don't pay union dues. But that's because the unions choose to have what's called exclusive representation.
Yeah, we're legally required.
It's a monopoly, is what it is.
Let's thank Sherman. Thank you so much for your call. Thanks for being part of our conversation.
Great call.
In the few remaining minutes of this week's Eastern Standard, let's talk a little bit about process and about history of right to work in Kentucky. What is the history of right to work legislation? Has Kentucky ever been a right to work state in the past?
There's been several attempts to pass right to work, and I just wanted to make it clear. There's been several attempts to pass it in the state legislature, and because of gridlock, they haven't been able to, and that's why the counties began passing. So many counties began.
Well, there's been many attempts, as you said, and there's been so many. I've been in office since 1999. They've tried to pass right to work almost every legislative session except for maybe one. They've been unsuccessful so far, and it isn't just because of Democrats. There are Republicans that have voted repeatedly against this right to work law because they understand what this is all about. It's about trying to make sure that unions don't have the opportunity or the real resources to really represent workers and increase wages and improve benefits. That's what we try to do through the collective bargaining process. Mr. Waters thinks that's a great idea, but he also thinks that he should try to undermine it by making us require and also to have folks that are in the bargaining unit that get all the benefits and continue to use the grievance procedure or anything like that, but they are not required to pay the fee.
I get to answer that, right? No, there are two ways that unions can organize. One is as exclusive representatives, or the other is as members-only representatives. They never choose to do members-only. I don't know of one company, of one union in Kentucky that's chosen that. If they choose to do members-only representation, then they are not required to represent people who do not pay dues. And the Indiana Supreme Court, when they upheld Indiana's right-to-work law, which was passed in 2012, it was challenged all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said that exclusive bargaining choice is optional.
Are we still waiting for a court ruling, by the way?
Yes, we are. That's why more counties have not passed this, because they're waiting on a court ruling, a federal court ruling that was heard in August. The union sued Elizabethtown, Hardin County Fiscal Court, and that has essentially stopped the local right to work movement for now.
Oh, do I get a chance to speak now? I don't know. You've blathered on over so many different subjects here. Now, the federal lawsuit here, right? Okay, and it's been heard, as he said, by the judge, and we're waiting to hear a decision. You know, Mr. Waters and his organization has continually encouraged these counties to do something that has been considered to be illegal under federal law for over 70 years, and they come up with this novel idea that all of a sudden, because they don't mention counties inside the National Labor Relations Act, all of a sudden it's legal. Well, we're going to see what the federal judge rules. Now, earlier we got to talk with Adam, and we mentioned about the out-of-state attorneys coming in, and Mr. Waters conveniently forgot to talk about his close association with Mr. Yesen, the attorney from Florida, who is fronting Protect My Check, which is being funded by the Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers group, who has given him over $50,000 in legal to pay for the legal fees.
He's given me that.
Is that correct, though? Americans for Prosperity has given Mr. Yesen's group, the one that you partnered with on the county right to work ordinances, $50,000 in the legal fees.
How much money has your union given to Planned Parenthood and to these other
options? Oh, here we go with that again.
Let's stop all that right now. In the 2 minutes remaining in the program, what I'd like to know is there a possibility the Democrats are going to give in and allow right to work legislation to pass this year in the General Assembly? Are we going to, are they going to wait to see what happens in next year's election when there's a possibility of flipping the House?
If they don't pass it during this session, we're going to continue to work on a county level to have counties pass this. And I would say, by the way, we were contacted by 50 counties after Warren County passed their right-to-work ordinance. They were interested. They came to us before we even went
okay,
to
let
them.
Me get Bill.
But you only got 10% of them, right, Jim?
Okay. Well, because the union sued.
You know, here's the way we go here, okay? We've been here before, I think is what I'm going to say. We've been here before under Ernie Fletcher. He tried to pass right-to-work, repeal prevailing wage. He ended up as a one-term governor.
Okay. Well, Matt Bevin has said, and in a recent interview, he said, if I have to get some things done like this and I'm a one-term governor, that's fine. It's not about that. It's about doing the right thing. By the way, the state law in 1978, the state legislature passed the County Home Rule Statute, which we believe allows counties to pass a right-to-work law.
And so, that's the issue in the federal court.
So
right
we
now.
Didn't just no. we didn't just
no,
come up
not,
with this.
No, it's not.
The issue in the federal court is whether the federal labor law preempts that
okay,
or
Bill,
allows.
Bill,
that.
Help me. Tell me.
Well,
make sure I'm correct.
Well,
here
it's an issue of federal labor law, the National Labor Relations Act, which Mr. Waters and his group has so conveniently just tried to ignore all the provisions of the National Labor Relations Act. They call it the National Labor Relations Act for a reason, so that it applies across the entire United States. So we don't end up with this crazy quilt of labor laws going from one county to the other that Mr. Waters and his group thinks is so great.
And by the way, we were working on right to work a long time before any of these other groups came to Kentucky.
And we are out of time in our conversation about right to work. But gentlemen, thank you so much both to Jim Waters of the Bluegrass Institute and Bill Londrigan of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. In terms of information, your websites will have links to your websites so listeners can learn more about both sides of this issue.
And read my column in the Richmond Register.
Okay. And Bill Londrigan, likewise, of the AFL-CIO, we make sure that we have links available for folks who want to compare and follow this process. I'm sure we're going to hear more about this issue during this upcoming legislative session and in the coming years in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Noah Day produced this week's Eastern Standard with assistance from Logan Riley and Andrew Moorhead at the controls. We had Brian Bartlett. This program will be available as a podcast or for online listening from our website at weku.fm. It'll be there early this afternoon. And, of course, the show repeats on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. We're always interested in hearing from our listeners. Follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST. Send us an email, weku.easternstandard@gmail.com. And join us again next week for Eastern Standard, Thursday morning at 11, live on 88.9 WEKU. I'm John Hingsbergen.